From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Amazon is a colossus in the world of online retailing. Bigger online than Best Buy, Netflix, Dell, Walmart, and Apple combined. And that's not just shoes and cameras and paperbacks. Amazon now sells business infrastructure, too. Warehouses, order taking, logistics, delivery. It's turning into the back-end utility, almost, behind a huge chunk of the U.S. retail economy as an enabler and a competitor. Now it's going for same-day delivery and maybe the end of physical retail as we've known it. This hour On Point, living in the Amazon economy. You can join the conversation. Do you get the scale of Amazon's back end? What does it mean for the American economy, your shopping district, your store, your job? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Here's an Amazon commercial. Gives you a sense of the way they want you to think about Amazon. Hate to leave your house to shop, they say? Crawl through traffic to the mall? Well, here's Amazon's song.
To leave your house to shop, to crawl through traffic to the mall.
Just to find the thing you wanted.
Isn't even there at all.
Amazon.com is the answer.
Shop at home in style and ease.
Find exactly what you want.
Ordering your stuff's a breeze.
Books on tape.
Games galore.
Everything you're looking for.
Kindle. Cameras.
Electronics.
Baby Einstein.
Hooked on phonics.
Blu-ray.
Movies.
And TV.
Downloads.
Music.
MP3.
Pixar.
Disney.
Microphones.
Pet supplies and doggy bones.
World of Warcraft.
Nancy Drew.
Sims.
The Scruff
System, too.
Click Amazon.
You'll smile with glee.
Sometimes shipping's even free.
We are the world, says Amazon, and it's not just their stuff. You can buy from an awful lot of people these days who are actually shipping to you via Amazon's enormous infrastructure, and it's not going to stop there. Joining me now from New York is Barney Jobson. He's U.S. retail correspondent for the Financial Times and author of an enormous series in the Financial Times this week headlined The Amazon Economy. Barney Jobson, great work, an incredible piece of reporting. Welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
So, I mean, I realized that as big as I understood it to be, I didn't really understand everything that was behind the face of Amazon.com. You and others are now starting to describe it as a utility behind American retail. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's absolutely right. Of course, Amazon's been around now for about 17 years, and we all know that it's changed the way people shop. But what's new is that it's now changing the way that businesses are actually built. And this is because it's turning its own systems inside out and making them available for other companies to rent. And by systems, I mean its website. It's now allowing other retailers to have a presence on its website. It's allowing other retailers to use its warehouses. It's allowing other retailers to use its services to store their data to create databases. And it's taking a fee for all these things. And by doing that, it's enabling small business people to build companies in new ways. In the old day, you would have had to set up your own website. You would have had to find your own storage space. You would have had to buy your own servers. But now you can do that using Amazon systems. So it's becoming a lot cheaper to set up a company. But that also means Amazon is taking on huge importance across a large swathe of the economy, and that's very much like a utility. It's like a water company or an electricity company that's providing all these fundamental services that others need to operate. Amazon is now entering that realm.
And it may be enabling my company selling, you know, whatever kind of tchotchke or product it is, but Amazon then also owns an awful lot of what would traditionally be thought of as my company or my retail operation. I mean, starting with the customer relationship.
That's absolutely right. There are benefits to working with Amazon, but there are big costs, of course. And one of those costs is that the companies that are depending on it are giving up a lot of control and a lot of autonomy. And you're absolutely right that they often lose their direct connection with the customer, which is one of the most important things in business. If you sell on Amazon's website, Amazon now makes it increasingly hard for you to get hold of a customer's email address because they don't really want you to have a direct relationship with the customer. Amazon wants to maintain that direct relationship itself. And another way in which you give up autonomy by working with Amazon is that all of a sudden your cost base, your operating costs, become very directly connected to the fees Amazon charges. If those fees go up, your costs go up. You can't really manage that independently anymore.
And Amazon knows all about my products and about my pricing. And there's nothing to stop them from stepping right into my market segment and competing with me, selling those products themselves. They know my pricing inside and out.
This is one of the most controversial aspects of the relationship. I've spoken to many companies who sell on Amazon for the Financial Times series, and a recurring theme is that they feel that Amazon is looking at their product selection. It's looking at the products that sell best, and when it sees something that's literally flying off the shelves, Amazon will often start to sell that product itself out of its own inventory. And because it's such a colossus, Amazon can negotiate a better price from the manufacturer. It can sell it at a lower price than its clients, and therefore those clients will struggle to compete. This is a big source of contention. Amazon's not really being clear on what its policy is here, but I see that as a potential destabilizing point in this whole system.
We're going to look at that infrastructure. It is enormous. Really, nobody who can compete with it in terms of online fulfillment. The founder and CEO of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, says it's just good business to put that to work for others. Fulfillment by Amazon, he calls it. Here he was in April. This was last year. Sat down for an interview with the website Edison Nation, explaining how Amazon planned to make the most of its investments.
We have these warehouses all over the world where we do our picking, packing, and shipping. And we've put a significant investment into making those things work extremely well, be able to deliver products very quickly, have the products close to customers so that you can get them to customers fast at acceptable cost. And that's a hard piece of infrastructure to build. It took us over a decade to build that infrastructure at a very significant monetary cost. And one of the ways we can leverage that infrastructure is by offering it to others for a fee. And that's what Fulfillment by Amazon is. So from our point of view, it's just good business.
It's just good business. Amazon CEO and founder Jeff Bezos there, and talking about Fulfillment by Amazon and that infrastructure. Barney Jobson is with us from the Financial Times. They've taken a very deep, big look at Amazon and just how big and deep that infrastructure has become. Give us a sense of its scale, Barney, of what Amazon now puts behind that sort of shopping service online. Seems like a little, nice thing, but you describe it, just a vast continent of infrastructure here. Give us a tour.
Absolutely. Well, firstly, Amazon's website now hosts 2 million independent sellers. Those are other companies or other individuals who are also selling stuff on Amazon, which is why if you go and look for a product on Amazon, you get a whole list of different options. You can buy this one thing from many, many people. Mm-hmm. And in total, there are 2 million different sellers on the site. So that's quite a staggering fee. The number of customers that now visit the Amazon site in the US on a monthly basis is around 85 million. Another massive number. It's got warehouses around the US that numbered 34 at the end of last year, and that number is increasing all the time, so it's popping up with these distribution centers in ever more states. Mm-hmm. And its cloud computing business, which is the business of taking its servers and allowing other companies to use them, is expanding rapidly. And that's now become the back end for a whole host of web companies that people will know, including Spotify, the music streaming service, Netflix, the movie streaming service, and Dropbox, the online file storage service. So it's got its fingers in so many pies, and it's kind of extending its influence all the time.
And server farms with, what do you call it, petabytes of data capacity?
Yeah, that's right. That, I must admit, that's a word I didn't know until I began this investigation. But when I asked someone to try and characterize the scale of Amazon's server capacity, they said, hey, we're beyond terabytes. We're certainly beyond gigabytes. We're into the realm of petabytes.
And you describe it all this as producing a kind of hybrid business model where Amazon, for some good chunk of those 2 million, runs the marketing, the customer relationships, the payments, the computing, the logistics and distribution, the shipping. Really, that's a very large portion of what we've thought of business being. They do it.
Absolutely. I mean, this is really challenging a lot of conventional wisdom about what business is. I mean, some people have described this as unbundling the corporation. What Amazon is doing is allowing companies to shed all kinds of core processes that traditionally we felt should be combined within a single business. So if we take an extreme case, and I've spoken to one bookseller that actually bears this out, he and his wife drive around the U.S., finding interesting books in secondhand bookshops. Mm-hmm. They put them in boxes in the back of their car, and when the box is full, they send them to an Amazon warehouse. The books are stored in an Amazon warehouse. They're advertised on the Amazon website. When a customer wants to buy them, Amazon does the shipment. Amazon processes the payment. Amazon deals with the customer services. Amazon deals with any complaints. So in essence, that gentleman I spoke to is doing nothing but finding books. Everything else is done by Amazon. Now, to a retail purist, this is very exciting in some ways. Some people in retail sale say,
hallelujah.
Exactly. Retail is all about finding good merchandise. Now I can focus on finding good merchandise, don't have to do anything else. That's a persuasive argument, but it does come with the downsides that we mentioned earlier.
On the other hand, reading through all this, it left me with the sense the disruption that Amazon meant for the book-selling business may really have just begun. And you describe how they now are looking at vastly expanding that number of warehouses even further, getting them into such proximity to consumers across the country that they can offer same-day delivery, at which point, what's the advantage a physical retailer has in many cases?
Absolutely. You know, Amazon is a very sharp and very dedicated competitor. And I think what they've done is they've identified, well, we've got a big business, but there are still a lot of people going to bricks and mortar stores. Now, why do they do that? One of the most important reasons is that a brick and mortar store can offer you instant gratification. If you need some toothpaste or some shampoo for this evening, for example, it's no good ordering it from Amazon if it's not going to arrive for 2 or 3 days. You're going to go to your local Walmart, your local Target, your local drugstore, and you're going to pick it up because you need it here and now. Mm-hmm. But by building more and more warehouses closer to big population centers, California, Texas, New York, Amazon is going to be able to speed up that delivery so it can get that toothpaste and that shampoo to you within 3 or 4 hours. And if that happens, why do you need to go to the bricks and mortar store?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Amazon economy. Amazon.com taking over the world from its web base and readying its next, maybe, knockout blow to physical retailers' same-day delivery, if they can pull it off. Barney Jobson is with us. He's U.S. retail correspondent for the Financial Times. Amazon is a pretty secretive company, but the Financial Times and Barney have dug in very deep here to look at the infrastructure behind all of that sales and service, that fulfillment, as they call it, a five-part series running in the FT this week. You can link to it from our website, onpointradio.org. Barney, we've got all kinds of response to this here. I mean, William says, Amazon is a great American success story, and there is no doubt that as a startup, a bit of entrepreneurship, that is absolutely true. On the other hand, we have spent some considerable time looking at some of those warehouses on this show that do fulfillment around the country. Really tough conditions in there for some people. You don't want to be an Amazon rabbit running around doing all that fulfillment. But Americans have really enjoyed getting all those products quickly and cheaply, often with even free delivery, Barney. I mean, it's not as though the country is not buying in.
No, absolutely. Amazon's size and its success is a function of the choices that consumers are making. They are choosing to buy stuff from it, and that's why it's growing so fast. But I think one of the points we're making in our series is its size has now expanded to such a point that we have to start asking whether there are systemic risks in Amazon's importance, i.e. is Amazon's influence on the economy now so grand and so great that perhaps politicians and regulators need to start thinking about this. If we think back to the financial crisis and when lots of banks were teetering on the brink of collapse, you know, we talked about the idea of these institutions being too big to fail. And I think, you know, as Amazon's development continues, we're going to have to ask, is Amazon now so big that we can't afford to let it fail? Are there so many businesses dependent on it that it can't afford to go? So that's a systemic question that I think politicians and regulators are going to start to think about.
We're going to talk in a moment to a retailer who moved into the Amazon world and ask how that worked out for him. All that back end, too big to fail. But I mean, beyond that, Barney, there's all the communities and shopping areas that have already been hit so hard by online shopping and by recession. You get same-day delivery going, we could really change the face of a lot of American communities. What do we think of that? Art in Corbin, Kentucky. Thanks for calling, Art. You're on the air.
Good day, gentlemen. I see this being very, very dangerous, and I'll give you an example. I remember when Walmart, see, I'm a former truck driver, so I'm aware of the importance but behind wholesalers and distributors.
Sure.
And I remember when Walmart first came on the scene, everybody was just so excited because everything was so much cheaper, and you could, it was like your one-stop shop for, you know, your big box items. And then they started getting into the vision centers and the pharmacies, and now it's groceries, and there was even talk of them getting into housing and banking here a couple years ago. And if we look back at what has happened to the small business owner in your small towns, and how much damage Walmart, for example, has done to these companies. And then you look at the prices at Walmart now, there really is no difference between Walmart and anybody else. It's just people are so conditioned now to buy at Walmart that they don't think about the small business person anymore. And this is why we are losing such valuable resources as our small entrepreneurs.
But are we worse off, Art, if you can go to Walmart and get what you need and the prices are decent? Are we worse off?
I think in a way we are, because we're taking money out of our local communities and we're sending it elsewhere. And a lot of this is going overseas. The majority of this money is going overseas, and that will include Amazon as well. We're talking about massively doing more and more damage to our economy, and this is the time when we don't need to be doing this. And I see Amazon doing to our wholesalers and distributors what Walmart has done to our small businesses.
Art, let us pick it up right there. Barney, this is meta-level change we're talking about here, but does it empower or does it overwhelm?
Well, I think the Walmart comparison's a very good one, and it's striking that many of the concerns that Amazon is now triggering are exactly the same concerns that Walmart was triggering in the 80s and 90s. But Walmart is now among one of the companies that I think feels very threatened by Amazon. And thinking about the consumer perspective, I'm always interested to see how many consumers I talk to are almost conflicted in their feelings about Amazon. On the one hand, they say, I love shopping there. On the other hand, they say, I hate what it's doing to the world. I hate the fact that it's destroying all these bricks and mortar retailers. But the choice to shop there is partly the cause of its destruction of those other bricks and mortar retailers. So I think in the minds of many individuals, you know, there's this kind of a two-sided opinion on Amazon, and people can't quite work out what they really want from it.
And Amazon's got the business model at the moment that's working, that's chewing up a lot of terrain. Jason in Pittsburgh. Jason, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. I'm a delivery driver for Amazon packages.
Okay.
For a private contractor for Prestige Delivery Services.
Okay.
And each day I go to a warehouse and pick up packages and get them in order of the route of delivery. And they wanted me to work as a private contractor when I started the job.
Yes.
And I get paid $1.25 per package, and I get $30 in gas per day. And some days when there's only 20 or 30, 40 packages, I barely make enough to pay for my gas and the wear and tear on my vehicle.
You get $1.25 per package delivered?
Yes.
That's it?
Yep. Yeah, that's it. I have to deliver 60 or so to make my money back and make more money. But to the way I'm making a profit. I'm going to start a new job Monday. I've been doing this for about a month now.
Does it look like a sustainable business model, Jason, from where you sit in the driver's seat, delivering those packages for Amazon for $1.25 per?
No. The people I work with, they're barely getting by. They're barely getting enough money to pay for their gas and the wear and tear on their vehicles. There needs to be some type of union with the delivery drivers, because there's not hardly enough money left over to buy food for our table. Like, I wouldn't be able to have this job if it wasn't for my girlfriend helping me with the gas.
Jason, I wish you good luck with finding another, and I really appreciate your call. I'm glad you're listening, and I'm glad you've called in. Barney Jobson, what about the durability of this business model if it depends on guys like Jason delivering for $1.25 per package?
Yeah, it's really striking to hear what Jason was saying there. And this is one of the interesting aspects of Amazon, that the company is all about caring for the customer, doing everything it possibly can for the customer. But the dark side of that is it pushes its employees very hard. Now, Amazon would say, look, we're just setting high expectations. But the stories that we hear from people like Jason indicate that it's a very tough place to work. And, you know, customers, I think, are going to increasingly think about whether they want to be supporting that kind of business. And I've spoken to a few in the last few months who said that they're not shopping on Amazon anymore, because now they know that each time they click that buy button, there's somebody in a warehouse somewhere who's having to kind of dash from one side to the other to pick up a package. Then there are drivers like Jason who are kind of pushing themselves to the limit to get those packages delivered. So that awareness of some of the working conditions inside Amazon, I think, is going to begin to have a greater effect on the company's overall image.
My goodness, the leverage they have when they're the only or the biggest game in town. I want to talk to a retailer who used to have a big physical retail presence but has migrated very substantially into the Amazon economy, and I think has done well there. Joining us right now from Puerto Rico, where he's visiting today, is Sachin Anand. He's Director of Business Development at GoVacuum.com. Son of the founder of that company, been in business for more than 30 years, now does 98% of its business online, 50% through Amazon. 7 years ago, when the country launched its online presence, it did $2 million in sales, vacuum cleaners. Today, it does more than $10 million in sales. Sachin Anand, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
Describe how the profile of your retail operation has changed from bricks and mortar to online, Sachin.
Sure. So in 1976, my father was the one who started the vacuum retail business. It was actually a brick-and-mortar store in the Northern Virginia area. Mm-hmm. And it operated that way up until about 1999-2000 when we first started our first e-commerce store. And we kept the stores, obviously, but the e-commerce business was growing slowly up until about 2004-2005 when we actually started beginning our sales on Amazon when they opened up their marketplace to third-party merchants like ourselves. And the business took off so much on Amazon that we sort of had to evaluate whether the brick and mortar was worth it. And then actually the 2008 recession and the drop in foot traffic that happened there actually made us decide to step back and actually start selling off those businesses and concentrate exclusively on online.
So basically, you don't have a retail store that I'm going to walk into these days. You got a small showroom in the corner somewhere, but not really. How's that worked out for you overall? You've got $10 million in sales now, that up from $2 million. That looks like a great success.
Yeah, I mean, we do have, like you said, a small showroom in our warehouse that can serve as a retail presence. But really, no, I mean, it's worked out really well for us to focus all of our efforts on online sales because it's opened up our, you know, audience to a small local market to an international audience at this point, actually, because we even have sales in not only the U.S., but Canada and the U.K. as well.
Does Amazon do all the things we're hearing about for you? Do they take the orders? Do they have the customer relationship? They do the fulfillment? It's all through them?
I mean, we do have our own independent e-commerce business, like I said, so GoVacuum.com, and we handle all the warehousing and customer service operations for that business. But when we sell on Amazon itself, when you buy a product from us through Amazon, about 90% of those orders actually then get fulfilled by Amazon itself. So they have our inventory in their warehouses scattered across the country. And when that order comes in, they actually fulfill it, send it to the customer, and if there's any specific issue that comes up with the order, when it's fulfilled by Amazon, Amazon itself will handle the customer service inquiry, which really reduces our operational burden and frees us up to concentrate on what we do best.
So that has all been working for you. At the same time, you know very well Amazon is a mighty e-tailer itself. What's to keep them from turning around and eating your lunch? They see what you sell. They see what you sell it for. Are they competing with you already? What's to keep them from stepping on you?
Nothing's keeping them. In fact, they have. I mean, when we started on Amazon, we were one of the first merchants in our category, the home and garden category. And I would say within a couple of years, we did notice Amazon picking up some of our products. It's not a huge threat. It's something we're conscious of. There's no part of the agreement that with Amazon that says they can't do that. But, you know, we definitely have to hedge our bets. We can't put all our eggs in the Amazon basket. So we invest significantly in our own e-commerce business.
Mm-hmm.
We also diversify on other marketplaces like eBay and Sears and Buy.com.
Sachin Anand with GoVacuum.com, selling a whole lot through Amazon. Sachin, stand by. I've got a lot of listeners. If you can hang with us for a second here. Bronze is calling from Boston. Bronze, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to parry some of the comments, these anti-technology comments, that have been made concerning Amazon.
Great. Let's hear it.
I'm not necessarily standing up for Amazon. Mm-hmm. But I would like to say with great clarity that what people are refuting is the enablement that technology and computers have afforded us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want Amazon, you don't want the part of your car which tells you, go down this street, not that street. If you don't want Amazon, then you don't want all of the advantages that Google may present to you, all the content that Facebook may give you, and all of the information on your grandkids all the entertainment that YouTube may present you.
Right.
And all the information on your grandkids that Facebook presents you. What we're talking about is the re-education of the American workforce. We want to have some sort of agrarian, industrial economy and live great lives economically in a world of technological enablement. It is confusion. And I think people need to really consider not whether or not Amazon is good or bad for them, but are they willing, as Americans, to stop feeling privileged and to start educating themselves and their children? for the reality which we live in now.
At Bronze, you put it very well. Let me put it first to Sachin, because he's living this life. What about it, Sachin? This is the new world. Get over it. Don't be hung up on the ma-and-pa store on the corner. Don't think about the job you used to have. Amazon and, the whole world it's part of is not just the future. It's now. Embrace it. What do you say to that?
I mean, I think there's no doubt in my mind that Amazon and what they're doing is disruptive, and it changes industries drastically. But in the world of business, businesses like ours, big and small, actually have to adapt. And in our case, we realized that having a brick-and-mortar store wasn't working out for us. But for us to survive, we had to adapt to the changing landscape of technology and e-commerce. And thus far, we've been pretty successful with it. So, I mean, I understand the claims of anti-technologists to a certain degree, but it is the new reality.
Of course, in the process, your success now is based in part on, and bravo to you, but you're eating the lunch of a whole lot of presumably smaller vacuum retailers around the country, around the world, who were selling out of stores. And now you're reaching over them with Amazon's infrastructure, and you're taking their customers. That's efficiency. That's technology. What are they going to do, Sachin? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it definitely was a concern, especially in the early years within the industry. We heard a lot of anger over what was happening in the online space. But the reality is, and companies like Amazon and other e-commerce platforms are empowering, and they have the opportunity to compete just as well. And we've noticed them coming into the marketplace as well. If you go to Amazon and search for some of our major products, you'll see tons of competitors in the space, and they were the mom-and-pop shops who've adapted as well.
Let's go to Bryce in Jessup, Iowa. Bryce, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I work at Best Buy, one of the largest electronics consumer retailer stores, and I don't enjoy the fact that Amazon is, bringing all this stuff in and bringing it so much cheaper than everybody else, because then the manufacturer has to come back and make it as cheap as they can to compete for us and for everybody else, and then the quality lacks, the longevity lacks, the performance lacks, and it just doesn't seem right that we're getting to such a throwaway society where every 2, 3, 4 years, people have to go out and buy new computers, new TVs, new everything, just to, just because their products are made so poorly that we have to keep, supplying that.
Bryce, you've worked at Best Buy. Have you seen the customers coming in with Amazon's, price check app where they can just click on your barcode and compare pricing to Amazon's pricing and maybe walk out and buy there?
Without a doubt, yeah. Every day, without a doubt. Several people come in, they'd be like, I have this TV in mind. I want to look at it. I'm going to go home and buy it on Amazon because I can get it 10% cheaper.
And off they go. There's a voice from Best Buy. Bryce, thanks for that. I mean, Barney, what about it? Do we get to such hyper-efficiency here that we're driving down Bryce's concern, not just prices, but also quality? Because manufacturers say, well, I got to cut a little here or there to make it work.
That's definitely a risk. And again, bringing in Walmart, that's something that Walmart's been accused of doing as well, pushing suppliers so hard that quality comes down. But the mention of Best Buy is interesting, because I think there is a way that bricks and mortar retailers can survive and perhaps even thrive in spite of Amazon, and that is to create stores that are such fun, informative, useful places to be that people will go shopping there even if they can buy online. The Apple stores are a very good example of that. People seem to love the Apple stores, but there are other companies like Best Buy which I think are still struggling to crack that formula.
We'll look at that and more. Barney Jobson is with us from the Financial Times. Sachin Anand has been with us from GoVacuum.com. Sachin, you really open our eyes. I'm grateful to you for joining us today. Thank you very much and good luck to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Amazon economy. Amazon.com taking over the world, it seems, some days from its web base and readying its next maybe knockout blow to physical retailers. That is same-day delivery. Barney Jobson is with us. He's U.S. retail correspondent for the Financial Times. They have put together a really terrific, deep inside look at the back end of Amazon and how much of the American retail economy it already underwrites. Their headline, The Amazon Economy, you can read it, the link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Barney, we've got all kinds of reaction online here to the story you're telling. Max says, as a recent university graduate, Amazon has been a huge asset. No one rips you off more than campus bookstores, Max writes, and Amazon was a great option for buying secondhand books. So there's that, but it's not just that. Realist writes to us, says, I live in Vermont, have an Amazon Prime membership, and it is great. As opposed to driving miles to go to a store which may not have the product I want, I order from Amazon. It's at my door in 2 days. I have a small machine shop. I can now buy precision tools and safety supplies from Amazon also. You know, the sort of bring it on attitude there, Barney. Potter looks at what's happening in the physical stores and says, you know, maybe this is partly in response, but consider that big box stores have been cutting back on sales help. Going to one of these stores, too huge to begin with, in fact, exhausting for some. You can't find anybody to help you. I mean, we know that kind of dynamic, Barney. The physical retail experience is not what it was either.
No, and I think all this brings us back to the point about technology, which one of your earlier callers made. And I think Amazon would make a very similar point, which is that, hey, this is not us doing this. This is technology. Just happens to be us implementing it. And that's there's some merit in that argument. But I think on the other side, it's all very well to say, look, we're just focused on the technology. We don't mind about the implications. We're not interested in the implications. It's not our ambition to put anyone out of business. But if the effect of using that technology is to put other people out of business, then can Amazon absolve itself of responsibility? I'm not so sure.
Can we talk for a second about sales tax? One of Amazon's big advantages has been that, though technically you're supposed to claim it, I guess, on your tax return and pay it later, basically nobody's done that unless Amazon took it out itself. And Amazon fought very hard against online sales taxes being applied, but it has reversed its position on that now, if I understand you correctly, Barney, and it's now saying, hey, we'll pay the sales tax. What's up with that strategy?
Certainly, Amazon would not admit to reversing its position, but it certainly seems to have softened pretty clearly in the last 18 months. And I think what's gone on is this. The political pressure on Amazon to start collecting this tax has risen to such a point that it realized it was going to be inevitable. The bricks and mortar retailers were complaining that this is unfair, that when Amazon doesn't collect sales tax, it translates into a discount of 4 to 9% depending on your state, and that's just not a level playing field. So Amazon has realized that this is going to become inevitable. But then what they've done is they've thought, okay, well, how can we work this to our advantage? And one of the interesting things about sales tax is that they only had to collect it in states where they had a physical presence. And for that reason, they didn't build as many warehouses as they might have done, because each new warehouse would have triggered that tax liability in whichever state it was in. But now if the tax is going to be inevitable, there's no downside to having a warehouse. So all of a sudden, we're seeing a whole surge of new warehouse plans in Texas, in California, in Virginia. And it's those warehouses that are going to enable Amazon to quicken the delivery speeds and get it to what we talked about earlier, which is same-day delivery. So they've turned this political controversy, it seems, to their advantage.
Pay the tax, build the warehouses all over the place, offer same-day delivery so that what? The idea is that hypothetically, you write that next day delivery would be sort of a regulation standard, and if I wanted it, order it this morning and get it this afternoon, they could do it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Wow. Brad writes to us, he says, brick-and-mortar stores must offer something new and different that Amazon can't offer. Intelligent salespeople, comfortable surroundings, you know, Wi-Fi, coffee bars, movie theaters, restaurants. Do you see a path for wide-scale physical brick-and-mortar pushback to this, or are people so focused on price that if Amazon makes it quick and convenient enough, you know, they're just out of luck?
I think there is a broader realization in the bricks and mortar world that they do need to raise their game when it comes to customer service and experience and making going to the store a fun thing to do. And I mentioned Apple earlier, that's often presented as the kind of the prime exponent of that. Other stores are trying, but I think the broader point here is perhaps there are still too many shops in the US, and that in the longer term, you know, we're going to see a reduction in the number of stores, and it'll be about quality, not quantity. The stores that will remain are those that can make shopping a fun experience, and the other stores, they're not going to be able to survive.
Boy, there's so many fewer stores already that have anything in them after this last recession. You're talking about really reshaping the face of an awful lot of American communities with this. Debbie in Springfield, Illinois. Thanks so much for calling, Debbie. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say I do use Amazon. It depends upon the item, though. If it's a big item that I want delivered, like to my daughter or something,
yeah,
I would much rather have that happen. But it also depends on the shipping and handling. A lot of times, if the shipping and handling is too much, I'll still go to a store. And another thing is there are some websites like Corral that when you order from them,
yeah,
they go through Amazon.
Exactly. That's what Barney's telling us here. What do you think it's going to mean for shopping in your community, Debbie? There in Springfield, do you think, do you already have a different kind of, you know, shopping strip? Is it going to change even more? Fewer stores? Where does this go?
Well, I don't know. They're still opening a lot of strip malls down here, and there's a lot of people that still go to the stores, I know. But like I say, I find it convenient sometimes. Sometimes it's not. It depends upon the situation that, you know, I'm looking for, what the item is and
exactly
how much it costs and everything.
But you've got options, and you exercise them, Debbie, and I guess that's what a market economy is about in a whole lot of ways. Thanks for your call, Debbie. Barney, Jim writes to us here, says, the whole Amazon retailing system is based on cheap oil and cheap air and truck distribution. What happens if oil prices go up or become scarce, driving up the cost of cheap transport? You know, what about all this air shipping and CO2 emissions? I don't know. Well, yeah, it's oil-based. Of course, all distribution in this country is right now, but Amazon's even more shipping-oriented, individual small orders. What about that, Barney?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I think if the oil price goes up, all retailers suffer one way or another. But it may be that Amazon suffers greater than others, all else being equal. But again, it brings us back to the technology point. Amazon is a master of technology, but unlike companies like Google or Facebook that use their technology to do kind of funky, glamorous, cool things, Amazon uses its technology to do the very simple task of keeping its costs down. It's not very exciting, but it's pretty effective. So even in dealing with a higher oil price, you know, Amazon has an advantage in that it can kind of use technology to run its trucks and run its warehouses in ways that perhaps slightly slower retailers can't.
Joan in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Joan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I do use Amazon. I have a chronic illness. I'm physically disabled and do not have a car.
Mm-hmm.
So the delivery part, and I usually hang on and keep shopping and shopping until I find what I want with free shipping.
Okay.
And it also, I don't have a lot of money, and this really does save me. And instead of being at the mercy of, you know, other retailers who often don't treat their help very well either, and that's a whole problem in that segment of commerce.
It's true. It's not as though retail employment has been the glory land, even in bricks and mortar all the time.
Glory land? I'm sorry.
It's not as though old-fashioned retail jobs were the greatest jobs on earth. Where do you think this goes, Joan? Where do you think this goes? Are we going to see downtowns, you know, more shuttered up than they have been?
I don't think so, because when I have the opportunity, I still like to shop. I find it stimulating and relaxing at the same time. I like to see what's out there. I like to feel and touch things, you know, and it's fun to shop. I really don't know. I think that this is convenient. I think that I have some things that I need, you know, for chronic pain or to, you know, like Biofreeze is a big thing I use. It's a topical pain thing. I mean, it's a quarter of the price at Amazon that it is in the retail stores.
Joan, thanks for your call. We see that cost savings right there, everybody's paying attention to that. Let me get one more right here, if I may. Clarksville, Tennessee. Daniel, you're on the air, Daniel.
The question I have is in regard to Amazon's life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when eBay first popped up on the scene, there were much better deals now than you'll currently find. Whether or not people are getting smarter and understand the value of what they have more, I don't know. But Amazon is kind of the same way. You would get much better deals earlier on.
Okay.
And they've kind of matured.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of like the Walmart of online world. Where do you see them at in their life cycle?
That is a good question. What's the vision here? Thank you, Daniel. Barney, what's Jeff Bezos' vision, and where is Amazon on that arc?
Yeah, I think the vision is to keep expanding these infrastructure services, to keep providing opportunities or platforms, if you like, for other businesses to grow. That's where it's going. But the life cycle question is a good one, because let's remember, Amazon is a technology company. And if we look at the history of technology in this country over the last 20 years, we've seen many examples of big companies that have grown fast, assumed a dominant role, disrupted lots of industries, but then have been disrupted themselves. I mean, think about Netscape, think about MySpace. You know, these were companies that everybody was very excited about, and then all of a sudden they faded from view. So,
but they didn't have the huge footprint in physical infrastructure that is not so easy to challenge if you're deploying it efficiently.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, I think there are unknowns here, and we probably can't imagine what's around the corner that could challenge Amazon, but there may be something. And I think the other factor that's going to shape the future is its stewardship of this ecosystem. Now, there have been other companies that have set up these kind of platform businesses, if you like. Microsoft is one example. Stock exchanges, credit card processes are another example. And in these businesses, it's very important to watch whether the stewards are abusing their power or running things fairly. And I think an important issue for Amazon is whether it can be seen to be running this system fairly or whether it's milking its clients. Because if it's seen to be milking those clients and acting unfairly, that could be a big problem in the future.
How do we avoid Amazon getting into, if it has more and more of the infrastructure behind what's being sold in this country, and there's millions of retail faces on that, but it comes back to, you know, their fulfillment, their warehouses, their shipping, and their competition. How do you keep from getting into a kind of, competitive problems in the marketplace here? Because their finger can be on the scales all over the place.
Well, let's think about what happened with these other utility companies we know, with water companies, electricity companies. They became regulated. The government decided that they'd assumed such importance and such influence that it was necessary to regulate them. Sounds quite out there to
regulate American retail. I mean, that's
it's not been done before, but it's not retail anymore. It is infrastructure provision, and that's a very different kind of business. And maybe there's a debate to be had there.
So what? They might regulate what they could charge for delivery, what they could charge for taking orders, how much the information of customers they could keep to themselves, how much they'd have to share, that kind of thing?
Exactly. You know, those are all possibilities. This is not something that anyone in politics or the world of regulation is really talking about for now. But I think as people realize just how pervasive Amazon is, those are questions that are going to start to be asked.
Luke in Boston. Thanks for calling, Luke. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just have a couple points. It is very, very expensive to sell through Amazon. I have a spreadsheet that is available online that breaks down costs of fulfillment. And I'm just an individual selling a few custom apparel items.
Okay.
I can't sell apparel on Amazon because it's restricted. I don't know why it's restricted, but it's been so for a few years. But anyone selling small items and they need fulfillment through Amazon, and I would like my item, for example, to be shipped, maybe bagged and boxed to them, it can cost up to 30% of my price.
Wow.
So at the end of the day, if I have to spend anywhere from 20 to 25 to 30% and give it to Amazon, it is almost impossible to keep your price reasonable. And if they begin selling the same thing or something very similar, it's impossible to make anything out of what you're selling because you need to pay to have it created, and then you have to pay Amazon to handle it.
Sure.
The back end and to get it to the person who wants it.
Luke, stick with us for a second here. Barney, what about 25 to 30%? Is that typical? Is that what people are paying to use this great infrastructure?
I think that's at the high end of the range, but I don't think that's the only example. And I think that brings us back to the question of fairness. Is Amazon trying to hog all the profits for itself in this system, or is it leaving a few dollars there for its clients? If it's not leaving a few dollars for its clients, well, either they're going to leave, or they're not going to join in the first place.
Luke, what's to keep you from just doing it on your own then, or doing it through somebody else?
The overall cost makes it very, very difficult to decide. It is an ongoing process. It's a great system. If you have no way to do it, then it's fantastic to be able to do what you have to do, and everything is handled by them. But at the end of the day, if you spend $10 to make something and sell something and you get back maybe 4 or 5, it's pretty good. But if you have to get back 2 to 3 because of fulfillment and shipping, the whole fulfillment aspect is what makes Amazon above all the top contender, and it's very, very difficult to actually make do. It may not be worth it.
Mm. Luke, you got your finger right on the heart of the matter there, and I appreciate your call. Barney, we've just got a minute here, but your series has done a great service in kind of opening our eyes. I mean, maybe this is efficiency, maybe this is great, but what's your sense of how well people understand what's really happening here and the scale it's happening at, Barney?
I think a lot of people still think about Amazon as just a retailer, and in a way it's worked to Amazon's advantage that people have not appreciated just how important and influential it's come in the way businesses are built. But I think that appreciation is going to grow, and then the company is going to face more questions about its political and social and economic influence.
Do they articulate their ultimate vision here, or is it under wraps?
No, Amazon is a notoriously secretive company, and they certainly don't share what their long-term plans are. So we're in the business of making deductions here. They don't give us a lot of help on that front.
Well, you've reported a lot here and deduced a lot very soundly, it looks to me. Barney Jobson, U.S. retail correspondent for the Financial Times. His five-part series, The Amazon Economy, running in the Financial Times this week. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Barney Jobson in New York, thank you very much for your reporting and your time with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.